Jeffrey Hazlett, author of the best-selling book, Think Big, Act Bigger, The Rewards of Being Relentless.
What's the importance of George Carlin to you?
You know, George Carlin always pushed the boundaries, and I thought that was great, but he talked about everyday things. And the biggest things for people who want to think big, act bigger, is their own little voices in their head. And he always spoke to those voices, and he spoke to people who just got in the way of themselves. And he used seven words you can't see on TV, I think it was the which I don't even think you can actually was a real problem. But not today at least, but way back when, because I talked about how people tried to stop me from saying certain words on stage, and yet that was part of what you knew. I was the dog that says those things, so that's who you hired, and why would you want to stop that, and why would you want to, you know, live yourself inside of these boundaries? And it was my way of being able to say you gotta think big, act bigger, you gotta get outside those boundaries. And so I used that as a great example.
But Carlin didn't say anything that there were words that people didn't know. They were words that people used every day.
We use them every single day, and if you're real people, you use those kinds of words. Not everybody, but you know, my wife wouldn't use those words, but I do, and other people use the words. Anyway, the key thing again, look, I'm relentless. I think the people that win in the end are those that are relentless. I don't think they're lucky. It's the people that are relentless and really make things go. And so the reason I wrote the book was to be able to say to people, you need to be able to act bigger and to, you know, take the obstacles that are in your way and move them past that, you know, whatever they are. Most of them are, by the way, self-imposed obstacles that you put in your head, or your budgets, or your mind, or your organization, or the way you can't do things. And that's what we were trying to do, is to shake it up a little bit.
Nobody's going to die.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, that's a saying that I use a lot. You know, we're not doing brain surgery for the most part as marketers or as salespeople or running our business, unless you're doing real brain surgery or operating heavy equipment. And the whole thing is about taking a little risk, taking a little bit of, chutzpah, or whatever the word that you want to use. I probably don't say Yiddish very well, but my point is to be a little bit more aggressive in everything that we do, and you take some risk. And what's the most that's going to happen for most of us in terms of failure? It's we have a paper cut. You know, I mean, that's what's going to hurt. That's all that's going to hurt. And so my point is to stretch the teams and go beyond what you're doing today in order to get to a new place, a better place. And what you have to do is you have to learn that no one's going to die. So what happens if you fail? What happens if you make mistakes? And by the way, let's get rid of this failure culture too, because a lot of people talk about failure. Like, oh, let's fail fast. You don't want to fail fast. Yeah, you don't do that. Win fast. Win fast is what you want to do. Failure is for losers. I'm talking about who remembers failure. Someone said to me the other day, he said, Jeff, how about... what's your biggest failure? I said, I don't know. I haven't done it yet. You know, and that should be the mentality of, you just go out. Failure is just a step in the way. It's not the end destination. So don't look at failure in terms of failing fast as the end destination. Look at winning fast and how we win fast as being the way in which we get forward and move forward.
Another of your little maxims, kill the squirrel. What is kill the squirrel? I mean, we're talking about no one's going to die, and now we're going to kill a squirrel.
Yeah, there's a lot of death in this book, isn't there? Actually, there's not a lot of death. This is about as much about freeing you up as an individual as it is about your business. You know, it's a business book, but it's really truly about a leadership book and a self-help book for a large person. But kill the squirrels is something I got from watching one of the greatest animated movies there is, and that's the movie Up. I love that movie. And in that movie, there's Ed Asner character, this old man. And he and this young boy go on this trip to Pleasant Falls, or Paradise Falls, and they run into this dog that has this collar that his owner's outfitted him with, this evil master. And Doug the dog is able to come up to you, and you can actually hear his voice. And he goes, hey, I'm Doug the dog. I like you very much. You seem like a nice person. My master has outfitted this collar where you can hear my innermost thoughts and what I'm saying. And all of a sudden he goes, squirrel, and he looks way over to the left or looks to the right, just like a dog would do. They get distracted, just like a young kid would do, playing in a third grader playing in a baseball game, and all of a sudden a dirt clod fight breaks out. That's what it's about. That's what happens every day in business. Squirrels. These little things pop up in your day. These little things pop up in your hour. And as ingenious leaders, sometimes we start chasing these squirrels when we shouldn't be doing those things. We have to kill these squirrels, because what we need to do is focus on the things that we've got to get done to make our business successful, or the things that we've got to do to change our behaviors to get to a better place of where we've been and where we need to go. So it's about killing squirrels, and I use that metaphorically.
You also say that you have to clean your own bathroom.
Oh, yeah.
Now that I've killed the squirrel... Why am I cleaning a bathroom?
Well, because you killed a squirrel. You got a real mess now at this point. No, I... I do this, and I've bought and sold over 250 businesses in my career, well, over 25 billion in transactions. You know, one of the first things I do when I buy a business or take a business over is I go in and clean. Well, one thing is you find out what's in the, what cobwebs are there, what piles of old stuff, what old data they're using, what old systems they're using, all those different kinds of things. But what I mean by cleaning the bathrooms is that's what I do in my business. I clean the bathrooms in the business today. I've did that when I was a CMO, and I do that today. And what I mean by that is I actually literally clean the bathroom. One, because I like a clean bathroom. You know, that's a good thing. But two, it shows the team that I'm doing one of the most mundane tasks. And by me cleaning the bathrooms, they're seeing that I will do anything we have to do. And so if you have to do another task, you shouldn't complain about that ever, ever, because I'm cleaning the bathrooms. And so that's what I mean by that. The other thing is it's really, a real example for you and your business to basically get your hands dirty, because I find a lot of leaders in business don't get their hands dirty. And the more you get down in the business and use the real software that you have to use, that you bought, you're making the sales team use, the faster you'll start to adjust and do different things in the business. That's what that's all about.
There is a tendency in the American corporate world to protect the CEO and the CXO and the C-suite from the problems of the day, which is fatal, because it basically means that they don't clean the bathrooms. They don't know what's going on. They don't go and listen in the cafeteria. They haven't got a clue where the problems lie.
Yeah, it's the ivory tower syndrome. It's the place in which you sit up there in these high thrones and you never get a chance to see what's really happening with the people. That's why I use the analogy of clean your own bathroom and get your hands dirty. And that does happen, by the way. And people try to shield you from all these things. And what happens, you start getting tunnel vision. You start hearing reports and people only saying yes to you all the time. So it's real important for a leader to get out and get away from those things and get down and dirty. You know, when I was at Kodak, one of the best things I ever did was go to Best Buy and put on a blue shirt. I literally went to Best Buy because I wanted to find out how to sell the inkjet printer that we were selling against our competitor. So the best thing I could do was to put on a blue shirt and get out on the showroom floor and see if it was exactly what my team said it was or it wasn't. And that retooled the way in which we went to market on the product. So that's what you need to do as a leader. You really need to get out there and make that happen.
We've got some really great lines in here. Steamroll obstacles.
Oh, I love this one, man. I've been known as a freight train, a Big Mac truck, and you know, a hard riding cowboy. And this is another one that I use for that. Sometimes it's important for us to be irrational leaders and just pig-headed and steamroll the obstacles. And what I mean by that is that a couple of different things that I think are important. You just got to push through. It doesn't make a difference. You can't be nice about it. You've just got to get it done, because that's what you made a promise to do. Those are the conditions of satisfaction in the business. So you've got to do it. So if you see obstacles in your way, I want you to go around them, over them, through them, any which way, you've got to be able to deliver. The other thing is I think you have to be a little pig-headed or irrational. Now, that seems like an oxymoron when you think about you're supposed to be a fair leader. But I was doing a television show where I was listening to a CEO of a publicly traded biotech company who was about to sell the business. It was about a $3 or $4 billion in sales to Thermo Fisher for about $14 or $15 billion. And he was presenting a presentation to a group of Harvard MBAs alumni down in San Diego. And he put a slide up and says, sometimes leaders must be irrational. And I thought, man, that's crazy. Why would a publicly traded CEO of a biotech scientific company that's all about logic and science say that you have to be irrational? It doesn't make sense. I actually wrote it down, put an exclamation mark, because I said, I'm going to grill this guy when I get him on air. I mean, how could you do this? And then he said, look, sometimes leaders have to take people from point A to point B. But what we do as leaders, we have to tell them we're going to take them to C, a little bit further than B, in order to get them to B. And I thought, wow, that's being irrational. But, you know, that's what we do. It's just like when we were playing sports when we were younger, and we get done playing soccer and we've been running laps and doing the things that the coaches got us doing, and we fall down on the ground exhausted. We're exhausted. We think we're going to die, right? And the coach says, get up and do it again. You know what? We did it again. We didn't die. And that's what it means to be irrational. Think about Steve Jobs. Think about some of the greatest leaders of their time. They were so pig-headed in terms of how the quality had to be, the user interface, the way it had to feel, the way it had to touch, the way it had to work. That's what leaders have to do sometimes. We have to be pig-headed. We have to be irrational. We have to put a stake in the ground and say, we're not going to retreat and tie ourselves to that stake and say, until we get this kind of level of profitability, we get this level of growth, we get this level of number of customers, we get this level of market penetration, we will not retreat.
Can anybody be a Steve Jobs under those rules? Or, I mean, the man had a streak of genius that was several miles wide and a few miles deep, and yet he was known for being absolutely impossible in intractable, difficult to work for, rude, pig-headed, and yet he created quite a company. I mean, he reinvented it. Are you saying that if people behave in a pig-headed and intractable way, that they too, and think different, of course, that they can do what he did? Or do you also need a streak of genius?
I think you have to always think big. You have to think beyond the things that you're doing today and what you have to do. But the most important thing is to act bigger, to be able to put it into a real plan that gets delivered. Steve was able to do that. Not everybody's able to do that. Now, I think they can think big, but yet they can't get it done. I think there are some people who can get it done but can't think big. We'll find those combinations of those two people. So if you're a big thinker, but yet you're not really good at implementation, go find the best people. Find the yin to your yang. And by able to do that, that's how you're able to be relentless and win. And, you know, I knew Steve Jobs, and I don't think you have to be rude like that. I don't think you have to be a jerk in order to be successful. I think you have to be relentless, and that's the key point, is to be relentless. So yeah, you have to be pig-headed sometimes. You have to say, I am going to get this done, or we are going to get this done, and you get people behind you, and that's what's called leading.
You also say, sell up, not out. Could you expand?
Well, you have to sell up. I mean, you have to always be working to sell more and more and better and be able to raise prices, be able to express the quality better. And if you're not growing, you are dying. And that's the biggest thing you have to kind of keep in mind. So if your business isn't expanding and if it's not growing, you're dying because you're starting to fall further and further behind because that means somebody else, your competitor, is gaining on you. So you need to be gaining on them.
With all of this leading and cleaning your own bathroom, you also say you have to have a servant mentality. Well, I guess that is the cleaning of the bathroom, but what do you mean exactly?
Look, we're here to serve others. And the way I look at it, if I'm actually able to help other people do something, like one of the greatest things that can happen for me is to be able to go into a restaurant and the server knows what I like to drink. Well, I'm going to tip him or her a lot more, or where I like to sit, and take care of me. And that's what I mean by that. We have to have a servant mentality. By serving others, we do a much better job. I try to do that in my church. I try to do that with my family. You know, I try to treat my wife like she's a queen, and I get other things in return for that. You know, I get forgiven when I'm really bad or whatever it might be. And that's what we need to do in our business. If I'm there helping serve my employees, if I'm here there serving my customers, if I'm there serving my vendors, I tend to get better products and terms from my vendors. I get better return on my investment with my customers, and I get greater, better, and bigger and fantastic employees by serving them.
But there's a difference between being serving somebody and being servile.
It's about being able to meet conditions of satisfaction. So if you sit down with your employees, for instance, and I say to them, and I want to know what is your dreams, hopes, and aspiration? What do you want to get from this job? What do you want to build for your future? And if their conditions are satisfaction, I want to have a great job so that I make good money. I want to learn new things so I can advance. I want to get smarter. And if I say, okay, what are those conditions of satisfaction around each of those points? I'm going to help you. If you do this for me, I'm going to help you make more money. If you do this for me, I'm going to teach you how to do my job. If you do this for me, I'm going to make sure that whatever those points are, that by serving them, I'm meeting what their conditions of satisfaction are. And guess what I'm getting in return? A smarter employee who's making more money, which means they're selling more for me, and I'm making more money, which is one of my conditions of satisfaction. Satisfaction, like building wealth or having fun or learning more. So that's the difference between the two.
At what point does one learn to delegate?
I think that's a really tough question because I think a lot of us who like to do things, and we learn to do things, meaning we like to do the things we do, or we think we're the only ones that can do them. And I think it's really when you want to start to think about scaling, that you want to do more, you have to have some realization that you can't do it all yourself. You know, there's a step, like for a lot of entrepreneurs, you move from, one-man band to devout followers. And the real tough step is to move from devout followers to skilled technicians and practitioners that you bring into the business. And it's a real tough thing for entrepreneurs. It's a tough thing for most people to do that, are good at what they do. It's just a balance you have to find. You have to find it. If you don't find it, you're in big trouble.
And then it fails.
A lot of times you'll see it fail. You'll see people fail because of that. Well, they'll still be successful, but it might be a lifestyle business as opposed to a wealth building business, which there's nothing wrong with that either if that's what you want to have. But, quite frankly, I'm more focused on wealth building businesses right now.